Welcome, 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 and happy surprise. Here's a little Friday episode as a little treat for you. Regular listeners will know every now and then I hear a podcast that really stops me in my tracks. And when that happens, if it's a smaller podcast, I'll often hit them up and ask if I can do a thing called a feed drop. As I've said numerous times before, a feed drop is something that podcasters with a certain amount of listeners might get asked to do quite a bit and to be paid for. I've never accepted a paid one. I've only ever done ones that it's my idea. And this is one of them. On Sunday, I was listening to the Mum and Mama podcast, and Kirsty Bosley was on. And I've had Amy from the Mum and Mama podcast on here. I've had Bozzers on here. And they were great episodes, but the conversation that these two had really blew me away. And basically, short backstory, Kirsty recently if you heard the episode with her, she is a journalist, and she had an article recently that went absolutely viral. The thing I loved about this episode is the kind of discussion on the positives and negatives of that. And again, then it goes deeper and deeper and deeper when they start to speak about history and upbringing and expectation and all these other things. And I loved it. I loved it. I'm a big fan of both of these women anyway, but I was really moved by this conversation and I wanted to bring it to you guys. So yeah, it's a bonus. It's free. You know how these things work. If you enjoy it, I recommend going and giving Mum and Mama a listen. It's a great podcast. It's not only for parents. It's just Amy talking to interesting people. Often parenthood will come up, but that can be kind of enlightening for all kinds of approaches to mental health, to how we live, all sorts of other things. So I recommend that. Obviously, I recommend going and reading Kirsty. I know Kirsty as Bozzers. So Kirsty or Bozzers, I'll drift back and forth. So apologies. Yeah. Go and give her article a read. Go and give her a follow on socials. And enjoy the episode, basically. Obviously, I'll be back next week as usual, or with another great episode on Wednesday. But for now, I'm dubbing it the ups and downs of going viral, because I think that's really what sums it all up. And it really, whilst that was the starting point, it was the conversations that triggered that really blew me away. So yeah, this is last week's episode of Mum and Mama, the ups and downs of going viral, with Amy Ballman in conversation with Kirsty Bosley. Let's go.
Work. And what? You have so many titles. Journalist.
Yeah. What am I?
Are you a commentator on wrestling?
Not commentator, no. I am a ring announcer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Only sort of... I just fill in for it, really. Don't ask me how it started, because it's a whole thing. But it was just one of those things where I was like, I've done this all my life, in terms of like, I've been a wrestling fan since birth. So I've always like played wrestling, and as a result of it, introduced wrestlers like myself and my brother or whatever. You know what I mean? I've sort of always like done it, and so I work behind the scenes at NXT UK, which is the WWE's British arm. I do some behind the scenes stuff there anyway. And
is that up where you are?
No, I come to London for that.
Oh, it's in London.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how often did you
have to do that?
So we're away for 1 week out of every, say about 6 or 7, and we do 2 days of filming.
Okay.
And so I've just filled in for the ring announcer a few times. And so, but you do it for a couple of days, and then it runs over like 8 episodes of TV. So, like 8 weeks.
So, what are you
in
the ring?
No, I don't. I stand on ringside, which is flipping lucky because I'm the kind of person that will fall over on my arsehole in front of everybody. Do you know what I mean? So, no, I stand at ringside and do all the announcements. I know. It's nerve-wracking because I'm not a public speaker at all. I'm very behind the scenes. And I've always thought, because I'm like, I live in a fat body. I'm not like, you know, I'm pretty chill with it. But as a result of that, I know that, you know, my accent and the way that I look means that I'm not really, I've never thought anyway that I would ever be able to like broadcast in any way, that my writing would always be just me behind a screen. So I never really thought that I would ever host anything. So I've never really thought about it on like a super serious level. I've only ever just, I don't know, just done it for fun with my friends and, you know, like I said, at home. And so when they were talking about ring announcing, I was like, I'll do that. I'll give that a go. And I was sort of just half joking. But they said, oh, well, send us a video of you doing it. And I was like, I've got nothing. I can't do this. But I did. So I ignored it and didn't send anything. And then one of my colleagues over there had said, look, record yourself pretending and send it over and let them have a look because you never know what might happen. So I did. And then months passed. It must have been months. And then, yeah, they contacted me and said, like, would you be up for doing it in front of a live crowd? it's just still so ludicrous to me to think about. It's just stupid. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then went and did it. But it was extremely high stress. Like,
How many people are in the crowd?
We don't have all that many at the moment just because of the way that, like, COVID is. And in the BT Sports Studios, there's, like, not all that much space. So a couple of hundred, I'd guess.
I'm just going to press record on here, just in case.
No problem.
That's still quite a lot. 200 people is a lot of people.
Man, it's 200 people more than I'm used to. So anyway.
What was it like the first time you did it?
Absolutely terrifying. Like,
had you done anything in front of people ever before?
No, I have... I used to work on a newspaper about 8 years ago, and a story that I did for them was I trained to become like a stand-up comic. So I did this. So every week I would go to these like stand-up comic lessons and write about it, and then I did a stand-up routine, but it was very rehearsed and very like very scripted, and I don't know, it didn't mean as much to me because it was just me in front of a bunch of my pals were there. Whereas this is like flipping WWE, you know. I've been watching this since I was born. So like the pressure, not the pressure that anyone else gave to me because everyone was wicked, but the pressure that I put on myself was like a lot. And I remember after we finished, I just got myself into such a state. We walked outside, me and, I don't know if you know Jim Smallman, he's a creative director there. He used to run on the Detraction Pieces Network, had a podcast. But me and him like left BT Sports Studios. And as soon as I don't know if it was just the fresh air hit me or something, but I just opened my mouth and just projectile vomited all over the place. And poor Jim, he's got a real thing about sick, like he cannot hack it. And I was just I couldn't even speak. I was just walking, there was just spew everywhere. And so we got there for the second day of taping and got out the car. Walked back through and like there was just sick everywhere, you know, the fans have got to be, it was just horrible, it was just really stressful. Oh my god. So yeah, I got myself into a right state.
But it's funny, isn't it, when you think about that, how much pressure you obviously put yourself under to make yourself do that. But you still did it.
Something that I have to really tell myself is that like discomfort, because I've got quite, I mean, I'm sure we'll probably get into it because it seems to be like the overarching thing in my life, but I've got quite a lot of like, you know, mental health issues, particularly in more recent years, as I'm sure a lot of people have. And something that I have to really tell myself is that discomfort is the price of progression, right? It's the price of development. You know, if you're uncomfortable, then it probably means that you're going through a learning or growing experience. Yeah. And so I have to tell myself that, because my instant go-to is, you know what, no, I don't think I will, thanks. I think I'll just stay at home and do nothing. So that's my go-to default. So I have to just try and reprogram my brain with it, really, to accept it as a positive rather than being like,
But it's an amazing thing to know that, but actually doing that, it takes a lot of courage, I think, to put yourself out of your comfort zone and your safety.
So that's
it's amazing that you can, and that should... Do you realise that? Do you realise what you are doing?
I think sometimes after the fact, particularly with the wrestling thing, because as soon as I did it, I just thought, even if they never ask me to do it again, no one will ever take it away from me. I did it. I really did it. And you know, and it's an incredible thing to be able to, like, to tell people, particularly, like, you know, my friends and that, who I know through wrestling, who have just been my wrestling friends forever, to just be able to be like, oh, yeah, I did ring announcing for WWE. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? I still just think it's
amazing.
Yeah, I do. I can appreciate that it is really cool. And I think it was... that in itself was nice, but when they asked me again to go back and do it again, I thought, well, it can't have been that bad. And yeah, it's just I'm learning to accept it and to enjoy the process. But I'm a bit of a funny one, really. So I struggle sometimes to just enjoy the moment. I'm always striving for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. I'm a bit of a goer like that, really. A goer, but, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Just
but that's understandable, and especially in those, they're nerve-wracking. It's not, I mean, that standing in front of loads of people is a very scary thing.
I think you do
get used to it.
Yeah, I hope that I will.
You will, you do. It's just the more you do it, the more it becomes normal.
It certainly was better the second time I went and did it, the third time I went and did it, the fourth time I went and did it. It was certainly, like, much more chill. And I think once you get your head around the fact that, like, generally people don't want to see you fail, you know what I mean? Yes. People want you to when I'm standing there talking to the crowd or whatever, if I, like, it's not so much the announcements, because those are easy to do. So, for example, like, this person is coming to the ring weighing this much. All that is very scripted. You can plan all that. But it's the stuff in between, like, where you've got to talk to the crowd. And I think, you know, I got myself into such a headspace about it where it was like, I sound like an idiot. You don't sound right, you sound like an idiot. And I think, you know, I have to stop and think, like, people don't want to see you fail. They're there to have fun, and so they're going to be receptive to it. And so it's just all a process. But I think that because of the way that NXT UK is, it is very much a developmental territory for, like, the bigger... It's developmental territory for the bigger wrestling, basically, in America. Right, okay. So, you know, Raw and SmackDown or whatever at WWE. Like, so NXT was always like a feeder. At least that's how I've seen it. I am freelance. I don't speak on behalf of WWE, so I can't say for sure what they would say. But that's certainly, I think, what it began as. It was like a developmental territory. And so... it's quite nice that also can go for me. You know what I mean? Not that I'm going to go up and go to America because they've got an abundance of talent, but it's the fact that, like, they're willing to develop my skill set. You know, the guys over in America that trained me in it, they were just so generous with, like, their time and their skills and passing on that information. And I just sat there and I was like, I'd pay you to have this, you know what I mean? I'd pay you to tell me this information.
Yeah.
It was like a masterclass with some of the best announcers in the world. So I just feel super lucky that I get to be on that little journey as well.
But they've all felt exactly the same way as you do.
Everyone's got a first time, haven't they?
Everyone's got a first time, and everyone has imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I think there maybe are a couple of people who don't have it.
Yeah. I think it all depends on how you're brought up as well, right? If you're brought up to believe.
And I think how much you care about it as well. Like, if it's something that you really love.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, that is. But yeah, I think it probably helps if you've been brought up to believe in yourself, whereas I never really got that. So it's all just having to be something that I'm finding as I go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I want to go back to what you said about living in a fat body and feeling like you couldn't, because of where you're from,
you
imagine yourself doing something like that, which is heartbreaking to hear, because... anyone can do anything, but also I completely get where you're coming from,
because
I'm a woman
Yeah.
You know, I've been told that I've got to be skinny my whole life from whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, I feel like things are getting more, not acceptable, but more, you're used to seeing more different kinds of body types now.
Yeah.
And it's like people are definitely starting to pave the way, because it doesn't fucking matter. Do you know what I mean?
No, well, you'd think that it doesn't, but like it still impacts me every day with like my job. Like the other side of what I do, so the WWE stuff is great, and the guys over in America, I'd said to them straight from the outset, like, I never thought that I would get the opportunity to do something like this, being the way that I am. And they were just like, you're a badass, what the hell are you on about? Like, yeah. they couldn't, and I used to think, it's a sports brand, you've got all these ripped and shredded people. I grew up watching wrestling, and the women that, I couldn't look up to the women as people that I felt like I could grow up to be, because they were just otherworldly and just so stunning and, you know, slender and muscular and athletic and just gorgeous. And so I used to look up to like Bret Hart because I felt like he was short and I was short and he liked pink and I liked pink. I was going about this, but I couldn't see myself in women in wrestling. Yeah. But that, I mean, yeah, that's by the by, because just the way that they are with me, they're just like, we don't, all that we care about is your talent. We don't care about anything else. Like, you know, and they're just so supportive. And like Alicia, who's the NXT ring announcer in America, she is just such a cheerleader. She's such a, like, she really encourages me to be myself. But in my other job, which is journalist, as in that's my bread and butter, my everyday job, the hate that I get for being a fat person is out of control. I've never experienced it in any, like I have recently. I had a story that sort of went viral, I suppose you'd say, and it got a lot more eyes on me. And while that was really cool, because I got a lot of people saying like how happy they were to read it and how joyful they felt in that experience, and we got to share that together, the hate that I get for being a fat person, honestly, it's out of control. They've had to start turning off comments on my stories to like
protect.
Yeah, because they have to like obviously they protect, the editors have to protect us as journalists, and they do they do a lot behind the scenes to protect us. But it's just humiliating, you know, to not be able to have those comments on, because people just rip me to shreds for being fat. It's miserable, man. It's really miserable, especially considering I'm writing a lot of food stuff recently. It's like, do you want me to just die? Do you want me to just die? Do you want me to just starve myself? What do you want me to do? Oh man, it's been a bit of a rough go, really.
I suppose I don't understand what drives people to respond in such a hateful way to something which, I mean, whatever you look like and however you are has got absolutely nothing to do with anyone else, or it doesn't affect anyone else.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and a lot of people have said, you know, if it weren't for the fact that you were fat, there'd be something else that they would get you for, because it's mostly like, you know, men, misogynistic men. It's mostly men that say these horrible things, but then they get like a lot of likes on their comment, and that gives them like courage, like, oh yeah, we like what you say, you know, we like what you're saying or whatever. But yeah, I think a lot of it, even on story, like when there's a picture of me, if somebody wants to comment and say this fat pig or whatever, then fair, right? It's not fair. It's grossly unfair. But like, I can kind of see how that would happen. Whereas like, there's stories where there's no picture of me whatsoever, but people remember that I'm fat and comment about it on those stories. Oh, it's just so cruel. It's just so cruel. I don't know. It's just cruel, man. I've been struggling to deal with that, I'll be honest.
Well, I'm not fucking surprised, because it's horrible. You're being attacked for, it's something that's completely irrelevant to anything.
Yeah.
It's and like them having a go because you've got dark hair.
Yeah, or just any, you know, of your attributes, yeah.
I think it's because
like for a lot of people, weight is something that you can control. So therefore, when you're a fat person, they think you're fat because of your own life decisions and choices. And you know, that's just not, we all know that that's not true. Yeah. We know that that's not true. I think it's like thin privilege to think that it's a decision that you make. I mean, don't get me wrong. I could get myself out and go to the gym if I wanted to be a bit thinner. I could eat better if I wanted to be a bit thinner. But like, you know, sometimes getting out of bed and just doing your flipping job in the day is all you can do. But nobody's going to understand that, are they? And I just think, would you say this to your kids? What the hell?
And if you don't understand, I think unless you go through something, you don't understand. It's like when I first had a baby trying to deal with the tube and a pram was just like, I couldn't believe how people just didn't help you. They didn't get out of the way. They just, it's like they didn't see you. But then I was like that. I mean, not as bad, I'd like to see.
Yeah.
But before I had a pram,
yeah,
I wasn't aware of how hard it was to have a pram. Do you know what I mean?
It's like, I know what you mean.
If you've never struggled with eating habits or the fact that, I mean, I've got friends who are stick thin, and when we were younger, they ate 10 times what I ate. And
just never got fatter.
Didn't exercise, never got fat.
Yeah.
I looked at a packet of biscuits and I put on half stone, you know, and I have to, I had eating disorders in the past. I still struggle. I'm trying to cut down on my sugar intake, but I find it really hard because that is my comfort. I gave up alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't take drugs anymore.
Well done.
But thank you. But sugar, people, if it was seen as like, if it was like cocaine or something mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. people would kind of understand the difficulty people have.
Yeah.
From my experience,
yeah,
the fucking sugar, that it's so hard to stop. But because it's an accepted thing and everyone has it,
yeah,
you realise how addictive it can be or how hard it can be to.
Yeah, to cut that out. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I was quite unwell a couple of years ago, and got put onto a medication, and one of the side effects of that medication, which is medication that keeps me alive, frankly, one of the side effects of that life-saving medication is that it increases your appetite, it makes you sleep a lot. It's just, you know, the point of it is it keeps you from dying of depression. But you get given that, and then that's it. And then that's your life then. And so, you know, sometimes, like, getting up and moving my body is hard because I'm tired. And the fatter I get, the harder that is to do. You know, probably should put trigger warning on this, really, for the things that we're talking about. But yeah, sometimes it's like, sometimes just getting out of bed is all I can do, mate. So if you want me to just be thin, so I'm not pissing you off on some article when I'm trying to live my life, then that's a you problem. Because happy people don't say things like that to people.
Yeah,
happy people don't. Yeah. So you just have to feel bad for them, really, that that's their life, isn't it?
I do think that, like I said to you, like, I don't know what drives someone to see an article or see someone doing, living their life, being happy, but and then feeling that need to attack them for something about themselves that hasn't got anything to do with.
Definitely. Like, I think another part of that is that, you know, life's really hard for a lot of people at the moment, and, you know, the price of everything's going up and life's really difficult. So when they see someone whose job it is to go out and have a free dinner, which is effectively what I do when I do a food review, right? The newspaper pays me and the newspaper pays for my dinner. So I go out and eat food and don't have to pay for it and have a great time in a Michelin star restaurant, and I write about it, and I appreciate that is, I'm really very fortunate to be able to do that. But they see that and they're just like, fuck this bitch, I've got to go out and graft every day, and this girl's got this. And I can understand how people would have, like, anger in themselves, but it's just the way that it comes out and how I have to be on the other end of that, that's like, that's cruel and difficult. And I'm sure that if I could have a conversation with that person and pull them aside and be like, look, man, this is what's going on here. This is the truth. This is the truth of the matter. This is what's led up to this. They don't see, like, all the student debt that I got into to be able to be a journalist in the first place, or all of the fucking trauma in my life that led to me being a fat person. Yeah. That if I could just level with them, I'm sure that we could just go, you know what? But let's agree to just live and let live. But because they're on the computer and we don't have that discussion, they're just acting out, aren't they? Sad, but really.
There's so many people out there with grotesque amounts of money, living extremely wealthy lifestyles, that, you know, it's not, they don't direct their anger at the right people.
Yeah, it's, no, that's true.
You know, it's like they pick on the easy targets.
Yeah, but again, like, I'll just say that there's, they're just sad guys, man, because happy guys don't do things like that. And so, I don't know, it would just be nice to be able to have a conversation. But no one's come up to me in the street and said, you know, you're a fat bitch or whatever. People don't say it to my face. They just say it on the internet. And it's my choice, you know. I like to engage with readers. I like to see what they like and what they don't like, or if they've had similar experiences. But I've had to learn to, like, not look at the comments sections of things. And that's, I just think that's such a shame.
It is a shame. Is there any comeback on any of it?
I think they're trying to make that a thing where they hold people accountable for the way that they are being. But I just think, you know, they can block somebody from commenting on the website ever again or whatever. But there's always ways around these things. It's like any online bullying. It's just rife, yeah. And it's hard to police. It's like the Wild West out there still.
Well, I'm sorry.
Thanks, man.
It's bullshit.
And it's a shame. Yeah, it's important to remember as well the fact that, like, since it was one particular article. It's probably worth me just mentioning briefly what that article was because we're talking about it, and some new readers aren't going to know what we're about. But I did a food review of a Michelin star restaurant. And it was just like, I'm common as muck and spent £150 in a Michelin star restaurant to see if it was worth it. And so the article was just about my experience there and how, in the end, I did feel like it was worth it. And a lot of people, like a lot, I'm talking like hundreds of people, have contacted me as a result of that article and just said, I just felt like I was right there with you. This brought me joy. And because there's obviously a lot of heartbreak and misery in the world at the moment. I think people are just, it was like a nice change from what they were seeing in the news. And so for every hateful comment, there's probably 200 lovely comments from people that just had a great time. So I have to try and look to that as well and not get bogged down with the misery of it, really.
But I get that. And you think, all the accolades that you get and all the love and praise, it is shit that the one shit thing you'll get will hurt. You know, you kind of not focus on it, but it does affect you. It's hard to kind of think, no, I'm going to concentrate on the positive, but...
And I've been struggling a little bit with understanding my relationship to these comments from people that I don't know. So, for example, if Nigella Lawson says, I love this article, this is great, and then Bill from Birmingham says, this is shit, you're a fat bitch. Like, why am I give more weight to Nigella in that moment? Because it's like, it's really Nigella, isn't it? And Bill. But realistically, both of those people's opinions are equal value, really. Do you know what I mean? I'm not to give too much credence to somebody like Bill from Birmingham who's calling me fat, but there's a situation in my mind there where I have to process and think, just because Nigella's Nigella and this guy is hateful, like, what, nobody's opinion means more than anyone else's opinion in this world. And that's hard for me to process, because then it's like, if I'm going to give credence to one, I then have to do it for both. Or I have to ignore both and just carry on and not let either of them affect me. So it's still a work in progress.
But also, if someone's giving a critique on the article that you've written and they're saying that it's good because of how it is,
yeah,
or they're saying it's bad because of how it is, then yeah, that's fair enough. But if someone's just like attacking how you look,
yeah, you're right.
That's got nothing to do with the article. So that's, you know... That's just them being a dick.
Yeah,
and
you are right.
Just say something's shit.
Yeah.
That's not a critique, is it?
No, that's true. But then, I don't know. It's a balance. It's just a balance. It's a balance I'm striking to try and like see like the humanity in both sides of that. And like, there's a lot of people that contacted me and said, you know, I'm going to just tell you're a really nice person. And I just think, that's really sweet, but how? I don't understand. You know, I'm struggling with, I'm just struggling with the feedback in general, really, and just taking it for what it is. I don't know. Yeah. That's a me problem, I think.
It's hard, but at least you're working through it.
I just keep going.
Exactly the same.
Keep going with it. Like, just keep putting the same energy into my stories. I've been a journalist for 15 years now, and you know, I've probably had more hits in the last 2 weeks than I've ever had in my entire career in terms of readership. You know, and but I've always put I've always tried to put the same energy into everything that I've ever written, and so I'm just going to keep on. And it was a significant milestone in my career, that story.
Yeah. How did it come about? Was it something that you wanted to do, or did the paper ask you to do it?
No, it was a me idea. The Michelin Guide had come out, and we didn't get any new Michelin stars in Birmingham. We've still got 5, which is the most of any other city outside of London. And I just thought, you know, it would be cool to go and just be like, is it worth it? And I'd said to them, and they were like, look, we can't put a flipping Michelin star thing on expenses because it's expensive, you know. And I was like, okay, well, what if I pay for the meal myself and don't claim it on expenses and write it up? Because I'd quite like to do it anyway. I'd quite like to go for a Michelin star meal. And so my editor was like, well, if you're sure, then yeah, go do it. And so I just went and did it, and it was a bit of a life-altering experience in a lot of ways. Yeah.
So what was the restaurant you went to?
It was Adams in Birmingham. I'd heard from the former food reporter at the Birmingham Mail, who's moved on now. She's at the Mirror. But she'd said to me, if you're going to go to any, go to Adams, because that's like the closest to 2 Michelin stars. And I was like, oh, well, if I'm going to be bougie, I might as well really, really go in. And so I decided that that was where I wanted to go. And so I booked and paid for it. And then when I arrived at the Birmingham Mail in the morning, my colleague Tamlin, who's business editor, he just looked at me and he was like, you're not going dressed like that, are you? Because I'm always just like dressed like this, like a 13-year-old boy. Always have, always will. And I was like, shit, am I badly dressed for this experience? Like, am I going to be allowed in? And I was like really stressing about it. And then just went by myself, and it was just unbelievable. It's just an unbelievable experience that will just stay with me for the rest of my life. I feel like it's altered the course of my life. It's weird. Just
really?
Dinner. Yeah, I really do. I felt like it was so significant. And when I came out of the restaurant, I mean, people can read the article if they're interested in what food I had and that. But when I came out of the restaurant, I went straight home and wrote it up. Like, I live about 10 minutes away. I wrote up the article straight away, and it just flowed out of me. I can't explain it. It was like, I was so enthused and so like inspired and excited that as I left, I just felt great. And then when I sat down to write it, it just came out really easy, blasted it out in like 15 minutes. It was just like, just buzzing. And so, you know, I think that's what people liked really, is that you could tell it felt, I think people could tell that I was like buzzing my tits off on this dinner. And that came across in the article.
It's a great read. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And I completely got all the
little touches.
That make you feel so special.
Man, I felt like $1 million. I never felt so special in my life. I know that's really tragic, isn't it? But I just felt like it was the culmination of like so many moving parts that it just felt like a serendipitous dinner. I don't know. This is really cheesy, isn't it? I just felt the journey of everything, like the chef and all of his experiences that had led to this moment, and like every ingredient and how, where they'd come from, where the thought that went in behind them. And then that chef took his knowledge and experiences, put it into something that I consumed, and then passed that joy to me. And then I went home, and in my own way, I put that out into the world, and then other people consumed that, as it were.
Yeah.
And just this amazing energy. Like, I don't know, I just, it was silly, but I just was like, I just feel like this is just passing good vibes through the universe. It just felt really like significant. I don't know, this is silly, isn't it? I know it's probably silly to listen to.
It's silly. It's lovely. And it's lovely that you had that experience. I imagine that whoever made that food that you ate, that's got to be the best.
Well, I've been back to see him since. I went to see him last Saturday. That the restaurant invited me back to go and have a tour of the kitchen on the back of that article, because they'd seen it and were obviously really pleased. And when I got there, I got there a little bit early because I knew that their like PRs were going to be there, and they, I don't know, there's like a PRs are really useful, but I always feel a little bit like stressed, like I've got to provide a story or got to do something. Yeah. I don't know. It's a different vibe. So I went and it was just a few minutes early. So I could just like stand there with the chef and like be like, flipping out, that was mental, wasn't it? And just have a real human moment. And so it was really nice to like meet him. And he said that the night before somebody from California had gone and booked out the chef's table downstairs and just had whatever like Kirsty Bosley had. They just wanted what I'd had because they'd read the story. I know, what a mental experience.
God.
I know, it's just incredible. And that, I mean, that was just like, I don't know, it was just amazing, really. And a few people had messaged me because the story, I got an email from a guy in California who'd said, I don't know if you know of this website, but it's quite significant in the Silicon Valley. And your story was like on the homepage of that. And I don't know if you realised that was quite a big deal. And I was like, no, I didn't realise. But then I had like a bunch of emails from people in California just saying like, loved your story. And then I had a few people that messaged me and said, I would like to pay for your dinner. And people were messaging, just being like, I'd love to be able to, because it was £150 I spent in the end.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'd love to send you £150. And I was like, I can't accept that. But if you'd like to, there's a homeless charity called Cypher Fireside in Birmingham. I was like, if you'd like to donate some money to them in my name, so buy some other people dinner, that would be lovely. And then Cypher Fireside contacted me and said that they'd had donations. And like, people were sending me receipts saying, I've sent £150 to Cypher Fireside. I couldn't believe it.
That's amazing.
Isn't that, like, do you see what I'm saying? Why I think that there was, like, proof in the passing good vibes around the universe.
Yeah.
Because somebody else then went and had a great dinner. Somebody else then sent money and so that other people could eat. I don't know, man. There was just something super significant about that. But a few people, so I know. And then this lovely bloke, who him and his wife love food, and they'd been to a few Michelin star restaurants, and he just sent money to another Michelin star restaurant in Birmingham for a voucher that then just arrived in my inbox so that I could go and have another Michelin star meal at another Michelin star restaurant in Birmingham, and because he just wanted to give me a gift, and I was just so touched by that, honestly. I wrote him a letter and told him about how grateful I was, but I was just like, this is just so lovely. I know, it's just this joy is like passing through from person to person. It's significant, isn't it? I feel like I want to cry thinking about it. It was just so great.
That's so lovely.
I know.
But do you think almost because all these wonderful things have happened, that's why you've had to deal with the shit as well?
Yeah,
she's got a kind of balance.
Yeah, it's just been a bit of a.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like an emotional situation, isn't it? You know, because you've got all these different emotions that it's brought out of you, like joy and happiness and, you know, gratitude, and also, you know, as a result, you've got all this, like, the misery and the sadness, and it's, I don't know, it just feels like, considering all I did was go out for dinner at a restaurant, it just feels like it's been an extremely significant, like, experience for me, which I appreciate is also mental. But I never claimed not to be mental, I told you from the outset.
I think it's amazing, and that is so lovely, and it does just make you feel nice when you know that there's nice people in the world.
Yeah, incredible.
And kindness.
Yeah, and I think just having different people's eyes on my stories, because that's, for me, it's all I've ever wanted to do, like, it's all I've ever wanted to do, ever, since very small child. I was like, drawing a newspaper and writing stories. It's all I've ever wanted to do all my life, is just to write stories for people to read. And so to have all those eyes on it and for people to enjoy it has just been so beautiful. And you know, I've got a meeting in London next week with like a literary agent that been and read my stories and said that they would be interested if I wanted to discuss like what my future looks like in terms of like if I'd want to write anything more, like a book or something. I know. So I'm going to. I know.
So
I know, mate.
This is so exciting. God.
I know. When I got that email in my inbox, and I just thought, like, even if nothing comes of this literary agent, and they represent like Sunday Times bestsellers, this agent. I know. And when I saw just the idea of like how many articles and stories and words do they read every day, and then they found me and liked my work. It's just, it just feels like I just can't believe, like I just cannot believe it. It just feels like so wonderful. It's just one of the best things that's ever happened in my whole life.
Oh, so excited!
Oh, no, thanks, man. I just feel
so. You've always wanted to be a journalist?
All my life, since very, very, very small. And I even remember when I was in like year 9 or whatever doing my SATs, I chose my options because I wanted to be a journalist. And I used to write letters to the Express and Star, which was my local newspaper growing up, which I did end up writing for. I end up with a column in there. But I used to write letters to them, just like begging them for work experience, begging them to let me go in, just see what they were doing. And I used to go and I used to get on the bus and I would post it through their letterbox. And it was always like, well, maybe when you're 16. And then it was maybe when you're 18. And then it was, we're not accepting work experience anymore, and on and on. But yeah, it's all I've ever wanted to do in my whole life. And so it's so lovely that I get to do that. It's just amazing. But it is also, it comes with its own like set of difficulties, because I've like strived for this all my life. Once you then like achieve that and you've got this cool thing, it leaves you with a bit of a void where that desire was.
Yeah.
And so it's about trying to channel that and think about what, you know, what else I want to do, because I do feel like, to a large extent, I'm like living my little dream, you know what I mean? I do get to like live my little dream, and so.
But you just enjoy
yeah,
it's it.
Like, yeah.
I want to.
No, you never know.
It.
You never know.
Would you want to write a book?
I guess so, but I've always thought that it was completely out of the realm of possibility for me. But
why?
Just because. Let me think about this, because it's quite deep, isn't it? But I think that my background, my history of like, I was brought up in like challenging circumstances. I was a single parent, and I had my main caregiver struggled with addiction all my life, and so we lived in like poverty. I'd describe it as, I suppose now, and you know, kids like me from like a real shit end of town, or you know, from the kind of background that I'm from, like we don't have those same. There's no one telling you like you could do this, you could be this could be you. So all my life, my desire to be a journalist and to strive for more has been as much, if not more, about escaping that as it has been achieving something good. You know, it's always been like running away from, and even now, like any desire that I've ever got to make money is only because I just can't be poor. I just can't live like, I can't even imagine going back to that time of like not having toilet roll or washing your hair and washing up liquid, or just any of those terrible things that like come with being living in poverty. And I think that a lot of that has been, you know, the striving to get out of that situation. And so I just never thought that anybody like me would be able to grow up to be anything, really. is the long and short of it. So I've never really thought about it, a book as being a realistic thing, until now as a 34-year-old woman, you know, I'm having to really look at that and go, I can achieve things, and it's okay to dream big dreams or to have ambitions outside of just like escaping like a bad time. So yeah, it's all just a bit of a work in progress, really.
Do you know what you'd like to write about?
No, I really don't. I can't imagine that I'd want to do fiction. I don't think my imagination's like good enough for that, but I'd quite like to do some non-fiction stuff. Maybe it just be a collection of articles as chapters, you know, and
yeah,
but I don't really know enough about food to be a food writer. I really don't think that I am, and also I'm a vegetarian, so that's like you're cutting out three quarters of your, your possibilities straight away.
What do you usually write? What kind of stories do you usually write?
I will write anything for money. I will write anything for money. I'm freelance. I've been freelance for about 8 years, and I will just write. I'll just write anything you need me to write. I'm like pretty good at turning my hand to like whatever. So I've done like copywriting for travel companies that have wanted like luxury travel companies to write about destinations. I've done that.
Yeah.
I haven't been there, but I've written about them. I've learned about them and written about them. And, you know, I really like to facilitate other people telling their stories. So I really like to interview particularly local people that have like done something cool. I like to tell their stories. And so I'll write anything, realistically. Yeah. And the way that things have been with freelancing, you just never know. Like, I've never been well off or successful enough to be able to choose what I want to do. So
yeah.
If they're like, we need somebody to cover shopping stories for a month, can you do it? I'll do it.
Yeah.
So I've never really found my niche. I guess features is probably it, where I can, you know, be a little bit more like colourful with my storytelling. So I really love to write features, but what that looks like, I don't know. But more recently, everyone's like, now I've got like a bunch of new followers that want more food stories, and so I wonder if maybe I'm just gonna fall into that groove for a bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Why not? If I'm getting free dinners, I flipping love a free dinner. Have you seen me? How am I joking? Self-deprecating fat joking before you can get me. I'm only joking.
Do you do that a lot?
Yeah, I've got to stop it. It's not good. Yeah, it's not good. I notice it when, like, sometimes if I'm around, like, kids, so, like, my partner's kids, I'll, like, make funny jokes about, like, oh, you need to give me more space than that for my fat bum or whatever. And I'll make jokes. And I'll just think, if I ever heard any of them speak to each other or themselves the way that I speak about me, I would be gutted. And that's, like, you know, that's a big responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's a good way to help you be kinder to yourself. Do you know what I mean? Because if you know that people that you love, how you'd hate for them to be like
that, to talk about it. I am guilty of doing it. I think self-deprecating humour is quite British, isn't it?
And it is.
And I'll always get myself on something. Before that, it was like, well, I mentioned to you earlier, it's like, oh, just like a big 13-year-old boy, like in my 13-year-old boy clothes, so I just wear the same clothes since I was a kid, like, you know.
Yeah.
But there's always something, but I do need to work on that. It's something I am aware that I do need to work on. It's not good, is it?
But it's not. But then also, don't be hard on yourself about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think if you're aware of trying to be kinder to yourself just every day, just kind of trying to grow on that, and then eventually you will stop.
Yeah.
I take the piss out of myself. I dress like a 13-year-old boy. And Lola, who's 11, her mate's got the same trainers that I've got.
Cool. I'd feel and good about like, that.
See? I told you I'd dress up cool. 12-year-old boy. Yeah. But
yeah.
I love
tracksuit. Something that I want to work on. People don't make it easy for you to work on it though, do they? Particularly now, like the way that, you know, there's a lot of bad vibes sometimes, and so it's something I've got to work on. That will get thin and then they'll leave me alone.
Yeah. But it's just so, I don't get it. I don't understand. I suppose it's, maybe that's, like, because you can't be racist or homophobic as easy as you used to be able to. Maybe people are clinging on to
the hate that they're allowed to spout.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's the last thing. Maybe, yeah, we just got to work on this one now. But how did you get into the wrestling? Were you just always a massive fan?
Yeah, just since birth. My I've got an older brother who's about 20, I think he's about 20 months older than me, and we used to watch it together as kids. And then there would be, so somebody that my mum knew used to have Sky, so they would record the wrestling and then give the tape to us And then we used to watch the wrestling the next day.
Yeah.
So I've just always loved it all my life. And then as I got a bit older, when I started work, when I was about 16, when I was 17, I started working in a music shop, working with a guy there who'd started to wrestle like on the independent scene. And I didn't know anything about independent wrestling. And so he introduced me to that. And we just all used to go to the wrestling to watch him. And then after that, I just never stopped going. I've always gone. Yeah. And then I had the podcast on this network. You remember the Cheese Night Jaw, which I still do have. I've not like lost the podcast. It still exists. But there was a whole nightmare a couple of years ago, in which a lot of shit came out about the abuse of power in wrestling, and there was a whole like Me Too speaking out movement,
right? Okay.
And ever after that, I've like struggled to support it in any way. I just don't. It's just hard to talk about, and I feel like I don't know who you can interview without feeling like I don't know if this person's legit. Like, has this person hurt someone? And you know, It's just been rubbish, really. Independent wrestling has just turned into a bit of a bin. It's sad.
Oh, shit,
yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah, it is bad. It's really, really, really bad. But still, not much has changed, I don't think. Like,
are they not doing anything about it, really?
No, so an all-party parliamentary group for wrestling was set up, and I went to a few meetings with them just to find out what they were doing and what their plans were. And very much the idea was wrestling doesn't fall under sport because it's predetermined, and so Sports England won't accept it as being like a legitimate sport. And then it's not quite entertainment because while it is, it's still a bit sporty, so it just falls into this like no man's land where no one's policing it. So like anyone can teach you how to wrestle, and that person could be a flipping nightmare paedophile, and you would never know. And so it's rough, man. It's probably not even worth me taking you down the rabbit hole because it'll make you depressed.
But that's ridiculous.
Don't even start me, mate.
Do what it wants.
I know. So all we're doing, like, behind the scenes still now, me and, like, a group of people that still campaign for change and reform and for someone to listen, and it's just difficult to get anyone to listen to what you're trying to say. And it's just like, oh, how many people have got to get hurt? It's like gymnastics, right? How many people have their lives ruined you know, destroyed? How many survivors have got to come forward and say that it happened to them until anybody goes, you know what, actually, let's do something about it? It's just miserable as sin. Just so miserable. But it sort of killed independent wrestling for me. I don't feel like I can trust it.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
That's shit, though. Is it very male-dominated?
Yeah. Pretty male-dominated, I'd say. There's certainly, in more recent years, there's a lot more female voices within it. And I think a lot of places are trying to be more inclusive on their boards or behind the scenes, to include other people. But yeah, it has been a bit of a dude fest for a long time.
Yeah,
by its nature, right? Just there's not all that many girls that are into wrestling. It's just the way that it's always been. But what that does mean is that, like, you've got stupid idiot boys, right, that have gone from being this nerd at school that never had any friends that like wrestling to being a wrestler, and then loads of people have been like, wow, you're my hero now, and what power dynamic that causes, and how that could then be turned into evil, which seems to be that something that a lot of dudes are into, turning things into evil. How are you joking?
Yes.
But yeah, there's a lot of that going around, isn't there? Horrible situation. It's sort of like killed independent wrestling for me and so a lot of companies, like, now they've set back up again, and they put safeguarding plans in place, and they're being transparent with what they're doing. But even then, like, that, how are they supposed to know if no one's holding them accountable? There's just a lot of, you know, there's there's an organisation called Wrestling Safely that have got a website that you can go and download like free safeguarding guidelines and codes of conduct that you can hold your staff to. And so there's like free resources available, but no one completes it really. All you can do is hope that somebody will pay attention. And it seems to me from meetings that I've had that the way that people are looking at it is you wrestling, police yourself. And how the hell are we supposed to do that? It's a downer. It's a bloody downer. Yeah. Shame.
So have you booked your next Michelin starred meal?
No, I haven't. I am going to do it. My next one's going to be Simpsons, which is in Birmingham. I'm going to go to that. But I don't know when, and I probably won't. I don't know if I'm going to write about it or if I'm just going to try and enjoy it.
Just enjoy it. What type of food was it at Adams?
Just like British food, I think.
Okay, yeah.
See, I'm so shit at it as well. I don't know any of like the words. I don't know any of the terms. I don't know any of the terminology or all this kind of stuff. But from what I can tell, it's just British food. So there's a lot of like,
yeah.
From what I could have anyway, there was just a lot of like mushroom and vegetables. Just vegetables. Yeah.
Did you have a lot of foam?
British food. There was no foam, thank the Lord for that. There was not even a single foam.
Did you have any smoke?
There was a bit of smoke, yeah. They had, on my favourite dish actually, it was cucumber. They had wasabi snow. And that, wow. So that was like giving a bit of a smoky vibe. But
nice.
It was just sort of like good food rather than it being like really flamboyant, like Heston Blumenthal style stuff. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I would love to experience that, like food theatre, you know.
Yes,
that would be wicked. Yeah. So I'm not against that. I would really love to experience that. But it was mostly just really, really great flavours and doing cool shit with
but
vegetables.
That's all you want, isn't it? Really, you just want to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what all I wanted in that moment because I was like, "This is the honestly." I had tears in my eyes. It was like there was parts of my mouth that I just didn't. I feel like there was taste buds that had never been invigorated before. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It was like, And my eyes were watering and I was like, my mouth was watering. I mean, it's watering now thinking about it, like Pavlov's dog. It was just so flavoursome. There's no way of doing it. And afterwards I came out and I was saying to my colleague, I was like, I just don't think I'm going to be able to do justice to how good it was in my words because I haven't got enough like synonyms for good. I don't know what I'm gonna. It was wicked. It was good. It was great. It was ice. It was excellent. I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with enough to say.
Oh,
it was good.
I want to go.
Come to Birmingham. We'll go. That would be really nice.
You're right.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah, it would be. I was in Cornwall at the weekend and we went to Adam Handling's restaurant.
Lovely.
Called The Ugly Butterfly. And we had the tasting menu.
Yeah.
And it was, I really appreciated the experience. It was a beautiful restaurant. The staff were all wonderful. It had all the touches that, like you describe in your article, it makes you feel very special. But it wasn't my type of food. I appreciated it all and I enjoyed it all, but it wasn't what I'd order.
Okay. What kind of food, would you say?
Well, I like all food, to be fair. But it was British. But it was quite a lot of cheese and quite a lot of fish. Which, I do like cheese and I do like fish. But that was just kind of an overpowering. Like, we had, one of the courses was venison. And I'd never had venison before. But for me, I'd like to go out and have a nice steak.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy with that. I'm quite easily pleased, I think, even though I'm moaning about the Michelin star.
Yeah, moaning about it. I was asking.
And it was very rich as well.
Yeah.
I
suppose you're going to have a lot of seafood in Cornwall, right?
Well, yes, yeah. And I do like fish, but I don't like, I had scallops. I've never really liked scallops. And crab, I'm not too keen on. But I did like it all. There wasn't anything that I couldn't eat or didn't eat. I tried everything.
Yeah.
But it was just quite rich. And I don't think I'm the right person to go and have that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would have been better probably not having the tasting menu and just having a dish.
What you fancied.
You know, yeah.
completely understand.
But it was, yeah, it was. It's a nice experience, and it's nice to do things like that, which I've never. I think I have had a tasting menu before somewhere else, but I'm not. I can't really remember. But I think that's definitely the first time I've had one at a Michelin starred restaurant, and I don't think I'll probably be doing it again. I might do once in my life, but it's not, you know, it's not.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
You know,
that's what, so I wonder if when I was saying about how it was the best thing ever and it's worth it, I wonder if that could be said for any Michelin star restaurant, if it was just that one, you know what I mean? Cause maybe Adam's is just spectacular and I'll go to another one and be like, yeah, it was fine. But maybe it was just that it just hit right at the right time. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe it was just Adam's, I don't know. It'd be interesting to talk to other people that went and how they felt about it.
But I suppose if it's what you like as well, like if I'd have had, if it had all been my food, like things that I'd eat or that I'd have liked more, then I probably would have felt a lot different about it.
Yeah. I think that's why I sort of wanted to try things that I wouldn't normally have. Just because I just wanted that experience. I just wanted to see what that would be like. And it was extraordinary.
Friend, actually, who was with us, she doesn't like, there was a few things on there that she wouldn't normally eat, but she forced herself to have it. She was like, no, I'm here to experience new things. And which I think is a great attitude.
Really good attitude,
and
yeah.
And she enjoyed everything.
Good.
So sometimes it is like, you don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, no, I don't like that.
You've got preconceptions really in your mind as well, haven't you? Of like, oh, I just don't like that. And that's just the way it is. But then there's definitely an alchemy at work with like a good chef where they can take the things that you do, like, they're very detailed with the nuances of each flavour, right? And so they can, like, make the best out of something or change something by mixing it with something else. There's definitely, like, some potion mastery going on that makes it good.
Definitely. And also, if you're going to have something that you don't like, you're better having it done by a Michelin-starred chef than you are.
Exactly.
Anyone else, isn't it?
But I honestly have to say that of all the courses that I had, I didn't leave a single thing on a plate. I ate every single morsel of every single dish. Every single one. I was just like, this is great, this is great, this is great, this is great. I just loved it. The cucumber I enjoyed more than the others. But I enjoyed them all very, very, very much.
What was the dessert?
What was it? There was white chocolate. There was some white chocolate, like, I don't even know how you would explain it. There was some, like, white chocolate situation.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I can't for the life of me remember what was with it. But there was like two desserts on this tasting menu.
Okay.
I can't tell you what it was. It was just good. I just wolfed it down. But it sort of picked, the dinner peaked really early because it was like one of the starters that I enjoyed the most. And I can tell you loads about that. But the rest of it was just like, this is nice. This is good. It was just good.
I'm glad you enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
And who, out of everyone that's read it and commented, who was the most surprising person for you?
I think probably Jay Rayner, just because even I know who Jay Rayner is, and I don't know like all that. I don't read food reviews. I'm not like super knowledgeable. And there's like names that I did recognise that I really enjoyed the fact that they had read it. But I think Jay Rayner is like notoriously, he's a bit of a hard ass, isn't he, right?
Yeah.
So
what did he say?
He just said that he was like, oh, I'm a bit late to the party, but I'll echo what other people said. This is just joyful. And I just thought, that flipping means a lot coming from Jay Rayner. Are you kidding me? That was a big deal for me. Other people was just lovely, but Marina O'Loughlin at the Times, the food reviewer there. She was like the first one, I think, really, to message and say that she'd enjoyed it. But it was just like, fuck me, oh my God. Can you imagine that these people, who this is their job, and they're saying like that they enjoyed it. I was like, this is sick. That was so cool. It was so wonderful. It was just lovely. It's just nice to have that recognition.
Were you on telly?
I wasn't. I was on radio the next day. They wanted to talk to me about it on the radio the next day. She's hilarious, isn't it? Oh my god, I was on the radio talking about it. Yeah, I think they were just hyped. Aww. People were just hyped to see Nigella talking about it, I think. Because Nigella, yeah. You know that Nigella knows what she's talking about with food. She's like Delia, yeah. Smith, isn't she? That would have been nice if Delia Smith had read it. Everybody fucking read this. Let me speak having you. Thanks, Delia. I might send it to her and see if she'll read it.
Yeah, you should. Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
so.
Oh, thank you for coming on to talk to me.
Thank you for having me. I feel like we've just jumped around all over the place. I'm sorry if that's been a bit scattergun.
No, that's all good.
Oh, good.
It's good to be on. But please let me know how you get on with your meeting. I'm very excited for you.
Thank you very much. I don't know if anything will happen with it, but it's just nice to be asked. Nice to be included.
Exactly.
Nice to be involved.
Well, wait there. Let's say bye and then I'll say bye properly.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye. Hi. So, yes, that was the lovely Kirsty. Thank you for listening. If this is your first time, then I've got, well, 2 years' worth of other episodes that you can catch up on. I've spoken to loads of wonderful people. I also do something called the Epic Mum Chat with the lovely Nikki, and we have a new episode out. So if you search Epic Mum Chat on YouTube, you will find us. Please subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Share. Sharing is caring. I hope you're good. If there's anything you think I should talk about or any guests you have to recommend, then please get in touch with me. Mum and Mama Pod on all the socials. Stay safe, stay sane. Big love to you all. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. As said, follow Bozzers on the socials. She's an amazing writer. Her journey is only going to get bigger and better as the years go by. Give Mum and Mama a lesson, a follow, a subscription, whatever you need to do. And yeah, I'll see you all next week. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.